fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Terrific Tuesday to you. So glad you're with me. Give me a call. 1-888-914-9149. It's a toll-free line to talk to me on The Cale Clark Show. 1-888-914-9149. We also have a Twitter account as well, at Cale Clark Show. My personal account, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. You can tweet at me. You can follow me on Twitter. And you can also email the show with your thoughts, with your comments, kale@relevantradio.com. You know, this is obviously an auditory medium, radio, but I was heartily encouraged by an article that producer Lucas sent me about reading during the pandemic, about how reading is actually up. And this has really, really great implications for all of us in society, and I'll tell you why in just a couple of moments. And Lucas is a very literary chap, in case you don't know. If he were alive back in the day, he definitely would have been hanging out with the Inklings, with J.R.R. Tolkien, with C.S. Lewis at the Eagle and Child pub in Oxford, England. There's no doubt about that. And we'll talk about Lucas's book choices in a minute. So I want to know what you're reading right now, because reading is up during the pandemic. Have you taken this time, this maybe extra imposed downtime that's on you, to do some serious reading, or maybe not so serious reading? I want to know what you're reading, and I know that people are responding on Twitter right now on the show account, at Cale Clark Show. You can check that. And if you can't call in, you can certainly tweet at us, and we'll read out some of those responses. But if you want to call in, tell us what you're reading and what you liked about it. Could be a Catholic book, could be something else. Let me know. 1-888-914-9149. There's an English literature prof named Karen Swallow Pryor, who wrote this article in Christianity Today magazine about how the fact that reading is up during this time is actually a really, really good sign for all believers in Christ, Catholic and Protestant and Orthodox too. And this actually can enrich our lives in a lot of ways. And a year ago, when the crisis started, when COVID really got going, The Guardian in the UK said that book sales were, they just noticed an immediate spike. And people were sort of thinking at the time, this is going to be a short lockdown. And I remember, actually, it's funny, because I play in this, I used to play in this Monday Night Basketball League with a bunch of guys. It's kind of a beer league type situation. And I recently found an email from the organizer, and it was right when the pandemic started back in March. And he was like, yeah, we should be back in the gym in about 3 weeks. End of March. Yeah. He was only off by about 18 months. But anyways, we're still not there. We're still not there. And everyone sort of thought at the time that the lockdown was going to be really short. But at the time, book sales are up, especially classics. Classics. Such as, and I have not read these books, I must confess. Except I did read one of them. But this is mentioned by Karen Swallow Pryor in the article. Gabriel Garcia Marquez's book, 100 Years of Solitude. I've never read it, but that seems like an appropriate title for the pandemic. 100 Years of Solitude. Maybe you feel like you're living that right now. Love in the Time of Cholera. Maybe even more appropriate for a pandemic. And that was written by, I guess the same person. Toni Morrison's Beloved. Haven't read it. Can't comment on it. F. Scott Fitzgerald's The Great Gatsby. I did read that book, and I read that in high school because I had to. It was part of an English class, but I really enjoyed it. It was fantastic, and I think there was a movie with Robert Redford at one point. I don't know if you guys remember this, but there was a recent movie with, of course, Leonardo DiCaprio as The Great Gatsby. I haven't seen that one. Anyways, another book that was mentioned, Sylvia Plath's The Bell Jar. Those were the books, the ones I just mentioned, that really moved right away on the charts. And a few months later, this trend is continuing. And now what seems to be happening is that really, really, really long books are scoring really well in the sales charts. For example, the 1,440-page edition of War and Peace by Leo Tolstoy. Perhaps you've read it. Also, another big seller right now, Don Quixote. Don Quixote. Or as I affectionately call it, Don Quixote. 1,056 pages. I may be the only one laughing at that joke, but anyways.
I'm laughing, Kale.
Oh, thank you, Karen. I appreciate that. I appreciate
that. I just
that.
Didn't want to startle you.
Oh, no. Yes, the laughter is good because that way it's that way Lucas can't use his crickets sound effect, which he always wants to pull on me whenever I tell a joke. And
dang it, Karen. I was going to use it, but now I can't use it. So.
Well, I'm laughing. What's funny about this, Kale, at the beginning of the pandemic, I bought Karen Swallow Pryor's book called On Reading Well. Yes.
Oh, so. Well, that's it. Yeah. I don't know much about Karen Swallow Pryor, but she does talk about sort of how it's important to read to have a good life and read mm-hmm. widely, and we're going to mention that in just a minute. But anyway, so thank you for saving me from the cricket sound effect.
Also Love in the Time of Cholera.
Cholera.
Cholera. Okay. Is that like the Canadian pronunciation?
It's like having a choleric personality, I guess. I don't know.
But. It's okay, Gail. We're here for you.
Yeah. Every time this happens to me a lot, by the way. I should have known that because that was a major pandemic, too, speaking of pandemics. But does this ever happen to you where you read a word, like somebody's name, or you read a word?
Yes.
And then you have to say it out loud and you don't want to sound like an idiot? Because I don't actually know sometimes how the word is pronounced. Has this ever happened to you? Thankfully, if you Google words now, how to pronounce whatever, it'll actually give you like a spoken word, like a mechanical voice saying, here's how you say Don Quixote or whatever. And anyways, this has happened to me a lot. And it probably happens to people who read more than they, I guess, talk
to
others.
Sometimes you just go along reading a novel the whole way saying the person's name wrong in your head, and then you learn it at book club that's not how it was pronounced.
When I came back into the Catholic Church, I was having these conversations with this priest who was helping me, and I was trying to impress him with my knowledge, and I was like, yeah, I've been reading the works of Teresa of Avila. I'm finding them very – he's like, you mean Teresa of Avila? I was like, yeah. Okay, I've been exposed.
Tomato,
here.
Tomato. I don't know.
So anyway, so this might happen here and there as we go along, but don't be alarmed by that. So the sales of these really really long tomes have been going through the roof lately, like War and Peace, Don Quixote, Anna Karenina by Karenina. Dostoevsky. Did I pronounce that one wrong too?
Anna Karenina.
Karenina.
I don't know, Karenina. Karenina sounds good. How do you say aluminum?
Oh man, I think should I just sign off now? Maybe I should just sign off now. From
I'll just
show.
Hang out this here is, and, just... and be your little note taker. Okay.
How about that? You can be my. You can just whisper in my ear and everyone else's ear when I say something wrong.
That's right. I mess up towns in Wisconsin every night on the Rosary. Thank goodness for Lucas or. If Jake is helping me, they'll say it in my ear beforehand. They know.
Yeah, they know. They'll do it. So that's the Rosary Across America, that probably happens to you all the time.
Oh, Wisconsin towns are.
Oh, man.
Get me. You can tell I'm from the other side of the Mississippi.
Yeah, there you go.
West of the Mississippi.
Hmm. So another long book that has sold really well is one I had not really heard of before. It's called Middlemarch by George Eliot.
Hmm.
880 pages.
Oh my
another book called Crime and Punishment. No, I'm only kidding. It's crime. I know it's Crime and Punishment. Crime and Punishment. No, Crime and Punishment, again, by...
Sounds delicious.
It does. It does, by Dostoevsky. And that is 720 pages long. So at any rate, long reads are becoming more popular as well. And this is what Karen Swallow Pryor says. As an English professor, she says that this is really excellent news because... As we sort of talked about just a minute ago, she's long been an advocate for reading widely and reading well because reading good literature can actually form your character as well as being a source of endless delight. And sometimes people have to acquire a taste for good literature. They have to be taught this. It doesn't necessarily come naturally. And that's what I appreciated, honestly. It sounds kind of corny, but books I was forced to read in high school, I don't think I ever would have read those if it were not for my English professors who forced me to read certain works of Shakespeare, The Great Gatsby, F. Scott Fitzgerald, stuff like that. So I'm thankful for that too. And I should be reading more. I got to read more. We'll be talking about this as we go along. And here's the thing too. She says in the article that her desire to spread the gospel of good literature isn't just a matter of wanting people to love what she loves, because she's into literature. She's very much like Lucas. You know, she loves literature. And she says this is really important because it helps people not only appreciate literature for its own sake, but it helps draw people to the good, the beautiful, and the true. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we Catholics can really appreciate. Those are the transcendentals, of course, mm-hmm. in Catholic thought. The true, the good, the beautiful. And we would add one more, unity. And those are really properties of being that reflect the glory of God, because they reflect the divine origin of all things and the unity of all truth and all reality in God. And we can kind of get close to this and discover some of these transcendentals through our reading. And she says that it's not an overreach to say that the future state of literacy, not just literature, but literacy as well, reflects the state of the church and its role in influencing the surrounding culture. That's an interesting thought, that if there isn't good reading going on and good literacy, that the church itself is not going to be able to affect the culture. And she quotes a famous poet, Percy Bysshe Shelley. And I like Shelley. One of my favorite poems of all time is his poem, Ozymandias. I think I read that on the show once. It's a great poem. And Percy Bysshe Shelley said once, in his work called A Defense of Poetry, he said, "Poets are the unacknowledged legislators of the world. What we read and who is reading," and this is Karen Swallow Pryor now, "what we read and who is reading has profound implications for what our world will look like, because deep reading stretches and prepares our brains for the receptiveness of meaning and truth." Interesting thought.
It's true. You know, she points out too, Cale, that the actual act of reading develops the same patience that's needed for developing virtue. Hmm. So, you know, when you think about, oh, I've got a big book to read, I'll just skim it. Well, it's the same thing as eating fast food. You know, it's like, right. Is that really good for you? Or do you want to learn from the characters, learn mm-hmm. what character means from your judgment of the character in the story? A lot of people won't read, nonfiction. Mm-hmm. They will only read nonfiction. They won't read fiction. I don't want to deal with something that's not real. Well, come on, everything is real. You know, a fiction story is usually coming from the writer's experience in the world.
Yeah,
so this understanding the characters and developing your own judgment, it's really cool. But like just the whole speed reading, that's fooling yourself. And what do we do when we're on Twitter? We're just speed reading.
Yeah.
We're just getting a bunch of candy.
That's right. You get that sort of quick dopamine hit, but you're not really engaging with anything. And that's a great point. This idea that if you read properly, it helps develop virtue. Like just reading a long book, like the virtue of perseverance, just trying to get through this thing and not giving up and not going to the Cole's notes. Or the Cale's notes, if you will. I've always wanted to write a book called Cale's Notes on the Bible.
Yes, exactly. Well, you know, I mean, you're wanting to learn. It's a great thing to want to always learn. Mm-hmm. But I think we feel like there's so much to learn, we want to learn it quickly. should take time with ourselves. We don't ask a newborn to do trigonometry or write a term paper. You know, it takes time, so...
It's true. Absolutely. It does take time. And we want to know what you're reading right now. Call in 1-888-914-9149. 1-888, toll free, 888-914-9149. I'm going to go to the phones right now. Nathaniel is on the line from Lewis, Colorado. Nathaniel, welcome to the show. And what are you reading, my friend?
Well, I just want to let you know I'm going through the Book of Revelation, but I take all of the – I've downloaded everything off of the Faith Explained on it. And so –
Oh, wow.
I sit down and I go through, you know, a couple of the episodes of the Faith Explained, and I just go through the Book of Revelation. It's just a fantastic Bible study and a great way to read and understand Revelation.
Well, thank you so much, Nathaniel. Hey, the check's in the mail, by the way. No, I really appreciate that. thank you for saying that. I really do appreciate that. It's great to get notes from people and calls from people that know that the shows are helping them to understand the scriptures. And yeah, we did this whole big series on Revelation. And I try to be your partner as you're walking through it, as you're reading it, and help you to understand it. And I'm glad that's been helpful for you, Nathaniel.
Yeah, it's been fascinating. I've enjoyed it so much. I share it with my children. It's just been, yeah, it's really a great way, especially if you can't get out to a Bible study, you know, or you're mm-hmm. busy and things are going on. It's a great way to do it at the house with the family, too.
Oh, absolutely, hey. Absolutely. Hey, listen, I appreciate that. Enjoy Revelation. See, it's not so scary after all, right? Once you once you learn a little bit about it and what it's all about, okay, I get it. It's not so scary. We can do this. So I appreciate you, Nathaniel. Thanks a lot for that call. That was Nathaniel calling from Lewis, Colorado. Now we're going to go to Tom, who is in Torrance, California. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and thank you for taking my call.
You got it. And what are you reading
right
these days?
I'm reading Because God is Real.
Mm.
It's by Peter J. Kreeft.
Yes.
It's a wonderful book.
And what if there's one thing that you could say about this book that really grabbed your attention, what is it, Tom?
It answers 16 questions. It says 16 questions and one answer.
Mm, that's right.
And the
that's
answer
right.
is because God is real.
Yeah, that's the answer to all those 16 questions. That's right. I have that book too. And Tom, something that you may be interested in knowing is that Peter Kreeft is actually going to be on this show on Monday, the 26th of April. So look forward to that. He's going to be on next Monday.
I am looking forward to that.
Okay, that is awesome. Well, listen, thanks, Tom, for calling in. Really appreciate that. And I'm glad you're enjoying that book. I have that book too. That's a great book. God is Real, 16 Questions, Because God is Real, 16 Questions, One Answer by Peter Kreeft. Yeah, Karen, there's a lot we can get out of reading. And in fact, here's another thing that Karen Swallow Pryor mentions in her article, that in 2007, there was a report that was issued by the National Endowment for the Arts on the reading habits of Americans. And it was called To Read or Not to Read, A Question of National Consequence. And here's what the study found. It says that reading skills and reading habits have significant civic, social, cultural, and economic implications. And one thing that was kind of surprising to me, well, actually, there's some stuff that was not so surprising. Literary readers are more likely to patronize museums and concerts. That's not surprising to me. Obviously, people who read are more likely to want to build up culture and support culture, like, you know, sign up for an orchestra, you know, membership or something, or go to a museum a lot, go to concerts, you know, unless they're like going to Metallica concerts. I'm not saying Metallica are not literate guys. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just kidding. But one other thing that they found about readers in America is that, and this kind of surprised me a little bit, readers in America are more likely to participate in sports and outdoor activities. So reading, being a reader, doesn't mean that you're just sitting at home in your smoking jacket, you know, with your pipe, you know, like Lucas does every night after the show. And you know, it means that people, readers actually are pretty active people. And that kind of surprised me a bit.
Yeah,
I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
It's like a, well, it's, I think it encourages you. If you are an introvert, to move out into the world. You know, you have this private life of characters, you know, that you've kind of journeyed through a story with. I think it's a very confidence-building activity. My younger sister, was obsessed with the Chronicles of Narnia. I've read them over and over and over again growing up. And, I mean, you know, it's just so interesting what kids will grab onto and just enjoy, you know? So, but yes.
Absolutely. The Chronic Chronicles of Narnia. That's an old Andy Samberg SNL skit. I sent that to Lucas. He didn't know about that. So anyways, also readers, by the way, in America are more likely to volunteer, which is a good sign. They want to give back to their community, and they're more likely to vote. Another responsible thing to do. Here's another thing. Now, this is the economic part of it, Karen. If you're a skilled reader, this is really important for people to know. If you read a lot, you're more likely to get a better paying job. Now, why is that? This actually makes a lot of sense to me. It's because employers say that one of the big problems that they have is that when their employees are not good readers and good writers, and you could see how that could be a problem, right? If you're writing an email to somebody and you say the wrong thing, you could get sued, right? So it's really important to express yourself clearly and well. And you can do that a little bit better if you're a good reader, I think. It's I know they have apps now like Grammarly and stuff like that to help people, but nothing really compares to having good facility with language, I think.
I agree. They say if you want to write well, read well.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that's why I read so much. I want to write well, but
It's a skill, and you can
just
practice.
Become obsessed with it, people. Let yourself, but read well. You know, look for what puts virtue in your life, because there's just as much garbage out there. You know, you can be sidetracked by not reading well. That's not reading well. So seek virtue, you know.
Seek virtue.
Seek the classics, and it's really cool. Yeah, they're not boring.
They're not. I have to confess, I haven't really been into the classics much myself. We'll talk about that a little bit more as we go on. We got to take a quick break here, but phone lines are lit up. I want to hear from you too. So we'll get your calls in just a minute. 1-888-914-9149. What are you reading during the pandemic? What do you like? Tell us about it. We'll be right back on the Cale Clark Show, Relevant Radio. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, welcome back to the show. We're having a great chat about books, about reading, and it's so important for us as people of the Word to talk about this because it affects literally every part of our life. I'm Cale Clark, and thanks for tuning in to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, and I'm joined, of course, by Karen Moran, one of the great producers here at our network. We're chatting about this and having a great time, and also your phone calls are a really, really important part of the show. Want to hear from you, and we've got a lot of people on the line. We're going to get to you just as soon as we can. 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call. 1-888-914-9149. Producer Lucas on Twitter, there was a lot of action as well, right? People are tweeting at the show account at Cale Clark Show or at my personal account at Cale Clark. What are some of the responses people are saying in terms of what they're reading on Twitter?
Yeah, we've got some great responses here, some really interesting reads. We have Lawrence saying he's reading Hope to Die by Scott Hahn, as well as The Diary of St. Faustina. So that's some deep stuff there. Louise is saying she's reading Walking with God, A Journey Through the Bible by Tim Gray and Jeff Cavins.
Nice.
And Philly Catholic, our good friend of the show here,
Philly Catholic,
saying he's reading Everlasting Man by G.K. Chesterton.
Ooh. You can never go wrong with Chesterton, the ever quotable G.K. Chesterton. Yeah, I want to read all these books. And Hope to Die by Scott Hahn is one I haven't got my hands on yet. But I actually talked to Scott Hahn about that book when he was in the process of it. He was just about finished that book. And I found the subject matter fascinating on this whole idea of burial versus cremation. That's not all of what the book's about, of course, but I actually was at I was meeting with the St. Paul Center at the time, which is the organization that he runs in Steubenville, Ohio. They do such great work promoting biblical literacy, and I got to see his famous Scott Hahn library. Talk about books! His personal library is as big as the public library in some small towns.
That's cool.
It's unbelievable. He's got people working there. It seems like 24/7 filing all these books that are coming in. It is seriously impressive. I tweeted a photo of it some months ago when I was meeting there with him and his crew. And wow, I should retweet that. That was a real highlight. That was unbelievable. I saw this legendary library of Dr. Scott Hahn, professor at the Franciscan University of Steubenville, of course, and famed Catholic theologian and author. All right, so 1-888, once again, 888-914-9149 is the number to call. We're going to go to the phones right now. We're going to go to Tom, who's calling from Eden Prairie, Minnesota. Tom, welcome to the show. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. You have speaker, sorry.
Yeah, that helps. Thanks. So we don't hear the echo.
So So I'm not, I'm a wish I could read person, but I am enjoying the Bible. Father Mike Schmidt's Bible in a Year is awesome because I can read along. And okay. I'm in a Bible study with Acts of the Apostles, but I have dyslexia.
Oh.
So I'm, yeah, so I've got a, about a, maybe a fifth grade reading level. And yeah, it's kind of an interesting problem, especially when you're young. And mm-hmm. so my nickname is Mott. So my, I think my first grade school teacher coined that because I wrote my name backwards. And everybody thought it was cute. So to this day, my family calls me Mott.
There probably wasn't a lot of understanding about dyslexia back then, right? At that time, in terms of
no, there was no clue, and it's so easy to hide it when you're a child because, you know, those were the days where the stigma of being called retarded was you know, I don't want to be that.
Yeah.
So you know, I would learn to count ahead, you know, because the teachers you just count, you know, read a paragraph. So yeah, you learn to adapt and not be found out very early.
Yeah, people can do that. I remember once hearing about the famous hockey coach, Jacques Demers, and he apparently could neither read nor write. And he hid that from everyone for his entire life, pretty much. And that is unbelievable, the lengths that which you can go to do that. So,
yeah, I actually successfully hid it from myself until I tried to go to college. I didn't even know myself. That's how absurd it sounds. But yeah, and then it was like, oh, wait, I can't even read. So, but I can do math and I can see things in 3D and I can, you know, pretty much speak any language after I listen to it for a while. I can't retain it, but while I'm in it, I can do it.
Well, so, Tom, this is such a fascinating perspective. So obviously right now you're obviously going exclusively audio material, audiobooks, I'm guessing.
Yeah, so I listen, but I read along with it.
Okay.
And, you know, the good news, so what's really cool about the scripture is everything happens to be numbered. So for people with dyslexia, oddly, it's not as difficult for me to read. For some reason, I don't know if it gives me waypoints or how it works, but, like, it's different. So normally I don't read the fillers, right? I just read the nouns and the verbs. So I just look at the page, read the nouns and verbs, flip the page. So there's no enjoyment of literature. I'm just getting data. But with scripture, it's different. And I do find it really enjoyable, and it's not agonizing. It's been wonderful for me.
Well, you know, I'm glad you called in, Tom, because you're obviously not the only one listening who's struggling with dyslexia. And so it's important to know that there are ways that you can work with it and perhaps work around it at some level and still learn and still take part in reading and especially soaking in scripture, which is so important for us. Yeah. I really appreciate that call, Tom. And thanks for calling in. God bless you. That was Tom calling from Eden Prairie, Minnesota. Wow. That's an interesting perspective. I'm so glad that he called in, Karen, because
Yeah, that's such an amazing perspective. No, my little sister who read Narnia was also dyslexic.
Oh.
So there was something very compelling about it that just kept bringing her back. But yeah, I'm so grateful that there has been progress made in understanding learning ability and you know, finding ways of helping children grasp literature, you know. It shouldn't, but what a great couple of workarounds he had there, huh?
Yeah, wow.
Wow.
There's a will, there's a way.
Right.
It can happen, and dyslexia is not something I know too much about personally, but I was really thankful that he called in because I know that he's not the only one, and hopefully that was encouraging to somebody else out there who may be listening, also struggling with that. So the number to call, 1-888-914-9149's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We're talking about books that you may have read or may have wanted to read during the pandemic. We're going to go to Pete right now, who's in Wisconsin. Pete, what is on your mind? What have you been reading?
Well, I just have two suggestions.
Sure.
Small-town parishes have started libraries, either in the church basement or in the back of church, a very small library of Catholic books that range from, like, the Catechism and the New Testament, and there's a lot of good Catholic novels.
Oh, yeah.
They just ask for donations, and you can It's you don't even some parishes you don't even have to fill out a library card. You just take it home and bring it back. And they, my second suggestion is I was grew up listening to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Oh yeah.
And they used to they still have something called Chapter a Day.
Oh.
I think they should have that on relevant radio. You could take a classic. You could take a classic Catholic novel, let's say something by Graham Greene, and just have someone read a chapter a day until it's done, and then, you know, pick up maybe a G.K. Chesterton and do that for 2-3 weeks. And I don't know who you'd have next, but there's a lot of good Catholic novels out there.
Hey, we may have a job for you in the executive team of Relevant Radio. That's an interesting suggestion. Really appreciate that. That's cool. Hey, and you know what? Yeah, we can take advantage of libraries, and many parishes have lending libraries as well. And you can get quality materials on the faith and stuff that's going to help you stretch your mind, stretch your soul in many ways. Pete, calling from Wisconsin, thank you so much for that. And yeah, and this is one of the great things about this article by Karen Swallow Pryor, who apparently has retweeted this conversation on Twitter. So Karen, if you're listening, thanks for this article. It is really, really good. And I got a lot out of it myself, and I couldn't wait to talk about it on this show. And one of the things that she mentions is that reading is really important, especially for believers in Christ, because we are a people, and I like how she puts this, people of the Word. Very often, a lot of Protestants call themselves people of the book, but we're more than just about a book. We're about a person, Jesus Christ. And so in the Catholic imagination, of course, we've got more than just the Word. There's Word and sacrament in which we encounter Christ, of course. But having said that, it's a person that we're after. And truth is a person. The Word is a person, the person of Christ. The book testifies to the person. Jesus mentions this in the Gospel. He says, hey, you think that by studying the Scriptures you have life, but you refuse to come to me to have life. The Scriptures point to me. And so we've got to always keep that in mind. And again, this whole idea of how this might affect the church, affect Christians, reading is a question of super, super importance. And in order to read well, you've got to have some leisure to do it. You've got to have some leisure to do it. And I'm going to, if time permitting, if we don't have time today, I'll certainly talk about it later this week. I haven't read this book, but there's a book that I've been reading articles about a book called Rest, which sounds fascinating to me. And the guy who wrote it understands the importance of leisure, quality leisure time. This is not doing nothing. This is not flaking out on a couch playing video games. This is actually intentional leisure in which we can do some of this reading. And Karen Swallow Pryor mentions a book that has just come out recently called Recovering the Lost Art of Reading, written by Leland Ryken and Glenda Faye Mathes. And what they talk about in the book is the fact that leisure today has very little meaning. They say, quote, leisure has little meaning and we're consumed with self. We fail to recognize beauty or the value of either the past or an essential human experience. We suffer from a lack of edification and a shrunken vision, end of quote. And I think that's really true, that we've lost what leisure is all about. And there's a Catholic theologian who wrote a book some decades ago called Leisure, the Basis of Culture. And I think that if leisure time isn't being lived well, the culture does suffer. I think there's no question about that. So that's why it is heartening, and Karen Swallow Pryor mentions this in the article. It's so heartening to hear about this increased culture of reading. It may be one of the good fruits of the pandemic. We've got to look at the good side of things, the bright side of things, and that is certainly one of them. And one of the things that she also says is that, on the other hand, there have been some serious downsides to life with the pandemic, and one of them is that some people have found it hard to focus, hard to pay attention. Some of it is due to the stresses of the pandemic, and this happened to Karen Swallow Pryor herself. Another thing that she mentions is, and this is where Twitter comes in and some other stuff, when we do a lot of reading on screens, that doesn't affect our brains necessarily in a good way. Digital media is not the same thing as reading a book. Studies that have been done on this show that when you read on a screen, it activates different regions of the brain than does reading on a printed page. And this has a lot of import for your attention span, what you can remember from what you read, even your long-term memory. And producer Lucas, I'm going to bring you in here because I think you were telling me earlier about how you've tried to read even on devices like a Kindle Paperwhite, which is supposed to replicate the reading on paper experience. And it hasn't always been super great for you, right?
That's true, yeah. And just by like the nature, I think it's just the fact that I'm around screens so much that like if I'm going to like try and relax and do some reading, like being on a screen while doing it just is not enjoyable and just kind of, it's not as restful, I guess you could say.
Yeah, yeah, I think there's really something to that. And I remember once talking with an educator, it was a friend of my wife's. My wife's a teacher, and one of her friends was talking about how she thought it was really important to get back to an analog culture. So the school where she taught at, all the clocks were analog clocks. They weren't digital clocks. They used real books. They didn't use e-books. They didn't use tablets to do textbooks and things like that. I think there may be something to that. And one of the things that Karen Swallow-Pryor says in her book, or sorry, not the book, but the article, is that when we engage in what she calls deep reading, and I think that's a great term because we've talked about in the past on the show, Cal Newport in his book, Deep Work. So there's deep work. There's also deep reading. And I think for deep reading, you need deep rest and deep leisure. And we'll talk about that in the future in order to be able to do that. But when you engage in what she calls deep reading, there's something that starts to develop in your mind and in your brain, really, called a reading brain circuit. And it's like an actual connection. And she mentions somebody named Marianne Wolfe, who wrote a book called Reader Come Home, The Reading Brain in a Digital World. So according to this writer, deep reading significantly changes what we perceive, what we feel, and what we know. And if we do that, that alters and informs and elaborates the circuit itself. So in other words, if you can form this habit, it's a self-perpetuating cycle. If you engage in deep reading, you can change what you perceive, what you feel, and what you know, and then it kind of just perpetuates itself. It stretches and prepares our brains for receptiveness of meaning and truth. This is what Pryor says. Perhaps like the harrowing of a field prepares it to receive seeds and yield a harvest. I think that's an interesting analogy and an interesting image, this idea that it's almost like plowing a field. This deep reading prepares your mind and your heart for seeds of truth that can be dropped in there, and that can in turn grow, sprout, and bear fruit in your life. Because this reading, and this is something you mentioned earlier, Karen, even if you're reading fiction, it still is applicable to daily life, to real life, quote unquote, because usually if what you're reading has no connection whatsoever to real existence, it's not going to mean anything anyway. So even if the characters, quote unquote, are made up, so to speak, it still can communicate truth, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the things that she says in her introduction in the book on reading well is reading literature more than informing us forms us. So we don't read literature like it's the newspaper to be informed, but we read literature so that we are formed. It's similar to, you know, the Bible or any kind of study of scripture, right? You're not really... Are you really seeking information or formation? So, I mean, generally, we're formed by what we read. So it's why it's so important to understand why am I reading this, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Just no, to go to the book club, so to discuss it, to move the conversation forward about what's happening in life. But it's really great to think about reading for virtue. And a lot of the classics are tackling problems of virtue, justice, humility, honor, love. It's so, I think we let's see. Lucas and I have compared it to, it's like running. It's a discipline at first, but then you enjoy it. And so you have to form yourself well. Don't push it on the kids too fast, you know. Teach them how to enjoy it, you know.
Oh, absolutely. I want to pick up on what you're saying, because the concept of the meaning of things is really, really important. I want to pick up on this after the break. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 1-888-914-9149. We'll be right back.
Faith, facts, and fun. It's The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the show. We are definitely having a lot of fun talking about this. What are you reading during the pandemic? 1-888-914-9149. Taking apart this article by Karen Swallow Pryor in Christianity Today magazine, reading is up during the pandemic, and that's good for Christians. And it's good for all Christians, including Catholics, of course. And just before the break, we were talking about how reading helps us to understand the meaning of life, the meaning of things. It's very important. And one of the things that Karen Swallow Pryor mentions is that a lot of the reading that we tend to do day in and day out consists of just the facts, ma'am. And sometimes those facts aren't even right. There's, of course, fake news out there, but we're consuming little bits of information, directions, data. Where should I go? When do I need to be there? Who do I have to report to? Who did what? Think about email. Not exactly the greatest kind of literature that you'll read in the day. And she says that truth is not reducible to mere facts, because for human beings made in the image of God, truth is found in the meaning of things. Human beings are interpretive, meaning-making creatures. And she gives an example. Easter. She says the facts of Christ's death, burial, and resurrection were observed by human eyes and testified by human tongues. But those witnesses then, along with those of us today, 2,000 years later, must make meaning of those facts to understand and receive their truth. That's an interesting point. And in the days leading up to Easter and after Easter, we did a lot of Easter apologetics, if you will. You can go back and listen to those episodes of The Cale Clark Show. We looked at Easter's evidence. How can we know that this really happened? Because that's a key question for a lot of people. And it's the most important question, really, because as St. Paul says, if Christ wasn't raised from the dead, our preaching is useless, and so is your faith, which is wasting our time. But you can know these things as facts, and it still might not change your life that much. For example, there's a small group of Jewish scholars of the New Testament. There's not too many of them, but there are some of them. And I remember hearing about this one guy named Pinchas Lapide, who studied the evidence for the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And he actually believes that Jesus was resurrected from the dead on Easter Sunday. He believed that this happened in human history, but he still doesn't believe that Jesus is the Messiah. I think that's such an interesting take. He thinks it actually did happen, that God raised him from the dead, but he doesn't think Jesus is the Messiah. So there's facts, and then we need to get meaning from those facts, and that's really important. And so the resurrection does have a lot of meaning, and one of the things that I think it means is that, yes, Jesus is the Messiah, and we should really listen to his teaching because it's got the divine stamp of approval. The Father raised him from the dead. And so, and she kind of relates this to literature and reading, because when we read good literature, we read novels, we read good poems, we read drama. And I guess this probably could be true of other medium as well, like movies, for example. A lot of people aren't necessarily good readers anymore or don't read a lot anymore, but they do watch movies, which are essentially, in a sense, they're like fictional novels in a certain way. It's a different medium, of course, and at some level the medium is the message. But at any rate, you can learn truth and you can experience truth through interpreting what you're reading, with what's going on with the characters, your reasoning, your inference. And there's often a lot of different layers of meaning, right?
It's true, Cale. She writes in her foreword to the book, the desires that are cultivated by books and other forms of stories, including films, songs, and especially commercials, can pull us toward the good life or toward a false visions of the good life. Yep. So it's like, this is why, yeah, we take the time and we don't just open up our head and let the ideas fall in, you know. Sort of have to discern. And,
critical thinking.
Yes.
Critical thinking is huge because everything you experience, as you said, even a commercial has a certain message.
A story.
A story. meaning that they're trying to get across to you, and a way of life, perhaps, a worldview that they want you to imbibe. So it's important to have critical thinking skills and understand what is being said, who's saying it, and why, what their motives might be. Look at all that, of course. And that's one thing about movies, I think, and media. Music is a great example of this. And Peter Kreef talks about this, that if you want to get a message across, do it through music. Because think about how quickly kids can pick up on lyrics, on song lyrics. Mm-hmm. They can memorize a song. And you probably saw this with your kids, Karen. Even my five-year-old daughter, she can memorize song lyrics like nobody's business. So Peter Kreef says, if you want to slip a message in, do it through music, because your guard is naturally down when you're listening to music. You're sort of just passively experiencing this, and you're taking it in, you're enjoying it. You're not necessarily being super critical of the message. And I always thought that was an interesting point.
I agree. At Easter, I had Alexa play Angels and Saints at Ephesus by the Dominicans. it's just Gregorian chant. And I have Alexa play it. My daughter said, why are we listening to this? I said, because it's good. It's doing something good to your brain.
That's awesome.
Tell Alexa to do good stuff, you know?
I love Gregorian chant. I love it.
I do too. Everyone get a Gregorian chant channel on your Pandora, on your Spotify. Just do it, because put that in your life, you know, build it in. It's like we were talking about self-care a week ago. Well, and this what is, you hear can be part of that.
So. Yeah, there it is. Thank you, Lucas. Absolutely. and you know, it is really about self-care. And that's really how Karen Swallow Pryor ends off her article. It's really about caring for your soul. She says, and she's quoting somebody else here, good reading is a pastoral calling. I thought that was interesting, because pastors obviously care for souls, and we have to care for our own souls too, just as a pastor would. Sometimes you've got to be a good shepherd to yourself to make sure that you do these things. So let's squeeze in a call here. Tino is calling from Salt Lake City, Utah. Tino, what are you reading these days? Tino, are you still there? Oh, Tino, unfortunately, is no longer on the line. Call back another time, Tino. Sorry that we couldn't get the connection there. Judith, we're going to go to Judith now, calling from somewhere in California. Judith, welcome to the show. And what are you reading these days?
St. John of the Cross.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Like it worked.
And what has stood out to you about that?
I heard this priest talking one time. He was doing a renewal here, and he kept talking about the dark night of the soul. So I was on retreat with this priest, Father Joseph Glenn, and I picked up the book and I started reading it, and I was really going through the dark night of the soul at the time. So I just read it all the way through, and then someone at work saw me reading it and said, oh, I've always wanted to read that book. So I brought him a copy. And then another book that I really love is The Eternal Mystic. It's about St. Teresa of Avila, the first woman doctor of the church. And this was written by Father Joseph Glenn, who's a Carmelite priest. And he recently passed away.
You found those ones helpful.
It's really interesting.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Judith, for calling in and sharing those works. Yeah, Teresa of Avila, or Teresa of Avila, as I mistakenly called her so long ago. Yeah, certainly the writings of the saints are huge, absolutely right up there, too. Let's go to another call really quick. Let's go to Mary, who's calling from Texas. Mary, welcome to the show, and what are you reading these days?
Hi, Kale. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
I wanted to get married since 2018, since I attended an ACTS retreat.
Okay.
And I've been listening to Relevant Radio and started listening in December. And I got hooked on marriage books for marriage and Catholic Church.
Oh, yeah.
And it started with Drew Mariano. And he recommended reading Three to Get Married. And then Trending with Timory, she recommended the ABCs of Choosing a Good Husband.
Uh-huh.
And from there, I got from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops a book of readings on marriage. And then my last one is the prayer book for engaged couples. It's for Catholic readings for the wedding.
Oh, lots of great choices there, to be sure. I'm going to give you my favorite book on marriage. I got a lot of people gave me a lot of books when I got married. And, of course, I never read them till later because I knew what I was doing, right? Well, that's the funny thing.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I don't need this. Well, the best one that I read was called, I think it's called, and you can verify this, Lucas, just quickly Google it, For Better Forever. I think that's the name of it. It's by a guy named Gregory Popcak. Now, this is an interesting book. And the reason is because he's a counselor and he's counseled thousands of couples. And it really shows. Wow, I was blown away by this book. Yep, okay, I was right about the title, For Better Forever. Check it out. Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. What a great show. We had a great time. Gone too soon. It's all over now. Timory's up next. I want to thank Lucas Holt for producing. Jake Moore and Patrick Alog screen the calls. And Karen Moran, of course, joined me on air. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.